Hey, you're listening to a Max Fun Drive pledge break right now.
It's the Max Fun Drive this year.
Yeah, we had to push it back because of COVID-19, but we're back, and this is a listener-supported show, and we do need your help. And it's not just me and Adam you're supporting. You're also supporting our producer and editor, Robs, who is here with us.
It's true. I have benefited so much from the Max Fun Drive, and I'm very excited that we're able to do it again in 2020.
It's not entirely canceled. Rumors of its death have been greatly exaggerated. We cannot do this show without the support of our listeners, so we're asking everybody to go to MaximumFun.org/join right now. And that means you there listening.
MaximumFun.org/join. Enjoy the show.
Captain? Captain? Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
We're on the other side of the galaxy from new Star Trek to talk about, Ben.
Yeah, but this is kind of new Star Trek. It's new Star Trek comic.
I love it. We haven't done a comic book episode in quite a while, it feels like. And whenever our buddy J.K. Woodward deigns to draw us into one, well, we've just got to do an entire show about it. I think that's the rule.
Yeah,
that's the devil's contract we've signed with him.
Yeah, we have no control over this. He'll just put us in something. How much Voyager do you have in your repertoire? Have you watched much Voyager?
I know enough about Voyager to know who the characters are and what their names are.
Uh-huh.
And I know that they're far away.
Yeah.
Like, they're in some other quadrant, and they're trying to get home. That's the story, right?
That's the story, yeah.
It's like Quantum Leap Star Trek a little bit.
Yeah.
They're hoping their next warp jump is the one that takes them home.
Yeah, except for it's just like a vast distance. It's something that they flirted with a couple of times in, like, TNG, where Q would snap his fingers and they'd be on the wrong end of the galaxy. And
yeah, J25 is like a lifetime away or whatever.
Yeah, so it's a bit of that. But I really like Voyager a lot. It's a show that I have a tremendous fondness for. So I was excited to go spend some time there today in comic book form.
Reputationally, it suffers from that kind of rocky start vibe, though, right? Like, isn't that the word on the street is, like, get through the first couple seasons?
Like all Star Trek.
That's what I'm saying.
The first two or three seasons are not great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, very Berman-era Star Trek where there's, like, weird sexist shit going on behind the scenes. And while Captain Janeway is, like, my favorite of the captains, I think she's underwritten a lot and misused in certain ways. And the actors that played the other female characters on the show had weird, gross experiences from what I have read. So it's a show that's perhaps the most complicated of the 90s era Star Trek properties, but as a show, I have always enjoyed it. So,
well, it'll be a long time until we get around to it, based on our current schedule for Greatest Gen, right?
Yeah, I think we've got like another half a year of Greatest Gen, but then maybe Voyager is next.
Yeah,
maybe you heard it here first, or maybe you didn't.
Maybe we'll have a good Max Fun Drive.
Hey, yeah, it's the Max Fun Drive, and the Greatest Discovery is a listener supported show. We are extremely grateful for all the listener support we get, and we actually have set a goal for the Greatest Discovery this year. We're trying to get to 2,000 new and upgrading supporters. So if you've got it, if you're in a position to help make this show happen, go to MaximumFun.org/join.
Yeah, if you're already subscribing to CBS All Access,
yeah,
I mean, you're supporting that monolith. Why don't you support the littlest Star Trek show that could, The Greatest Discovery?
You know how to pay for content if you're subscribing to CBS All Access or Netflix or Amazon Prime if you're watching Discovery or Picard outside the United States.
Hey, you know what menu screens make a lot of sense? The ones over at MaximumFun.org compared to the CBS All Access app.
Yeah, when you pause something on MaximumFun.org, it doesn't take the picture and then take it down to a postage stamp size.
What are they doing?
I don't know what that is about.
Yeah, they sure keep me on my toes.
Adam, I heard tell that you received some mail today, and this is because we've got a text thread that's you and me and our wives and your wife.
Yeah, the thread is called uh-oh.
Your wife sent a photo to the thread of a package on your doorstep with Spock drawn on the outside of it and some very skeptical looking emojis attendant to it.
Since moving to Los Angeles, I've got a mail and package system that is gate related. It's a townhouse situation. So to go to get the mail, you got to go outside the gate. Often the packages will be either out there in public view, which you don't want. You don't want that. or they'll be inside the gate on your porch for your townhouse cohort to see.
Uh-huh.
Also, not ideal.
That's why you always look for the discreet packaging option when you're checking out online.
Discretion not shown for this particular package by our friend J.K. Woodward, who wrote all over it, "This is a dildo." Now, of course, he didn't write that, but he drew something almost just as embarrassing. He drew Spock on the box, and you know, this is precious cargo inside this box bin. So inside the Spock voice bubble, it says, "I know I don't always show my emotions, but I'm quite fragile in giant type."
This is a message to the letter carrier.
It is. And, you know, you and I, longtime supporters of the USPS, love them to death, want them to stay around forever.
Indeed.
Does not appear as though this message was read / appreciated.
Oh, no.
This is a pretty banged up box. I'm hoping that it was just like in JK's recycled box pile, and that's why it's looking a little little rugged. But I'm going to open this baby up, and I'll tell you what's inside.
Yeah, it looks like JK is not an adherent of the broken box theory of postal policing.
Yeah, see that corner?
Ooh.
I hope we don't have anything of value in that corner.
I would have guessed that these were going to come in like tubes or in a flat box, but this is a box that's like 4 or 5 inches deep.
And also, if we're talking about artwork, like maybe instructions not to plunge a knife through it. Et tu, JK? You know what? We know our buddy JK recently moved, and I think this is a lot of recycled packing material.
Yeah.
Of the styrofoam kind. Oh, boy.
You want to see that stuff get reused, because it's no good in a landfill. You know, part of this, Adam, might be down to the fact that the last time JK sent you artwork, it got thrown away.
Have I told that story on the show?
I think you told it on Greatest Gen, but recap it for the people, because not everybody listens to both shows.
It's something that really hurts my heart to think about. I was in the process of a move not too long ago, and a bunch of my, you know, the artwork that a film and television fan gathers over the years was, you know, being put into rolls and packed flat, being protected.
Yeah.
At the same time that there was some construction going on in the house. And, you know, some cardboard looks like other cardboard, and some tubes look like they contain things that maybe need to be thrown out to an untrained eye. And so the very first piece of artwork that JK sent me, original work, like original stuff that his comic book pages were based on, was lost. It's in a fucking landfill somewhere. It's been shredded and turned into paper pulp. It's awful.
It sucks. Maybe what he sent you today will make that right.
This is original Smoke and Mirrors artwork, page 9. And you can just see how colorful and detailed it is.
It's so cool. This is probably 4 times the size of the page in a comic book.
Yeah.
The paper that he paints these on.
And in the margins, you can see like the production note of it. Like,
wow, cool.
The date, the issue, the signature. It's really awesome.
That is framing worthy.
And then we have the aftermath panels, which are which we'll talk about on page 12. Just enormous. What's cool about getting proofs like this is you get the inset panel on the outside. So you'll get like the panels of a comic book stacked, and then, you know, you'll occasionally get a panel on top of those panels.
Yeah.
Well, here's an inset panel in the margin.
Wow. That's wild.
Really, really great. Thanks, JK.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, thank you very much for sending them, but also thank you doubly for trusting me with a gift like this. I really felt bad telling JK the story of how I lost his work the first time around, so I'll take much better care this time.
Well, Adam, do you want to get into the comic book we're here to talk about today?
Yeah, it's the work of J.K. Woodward and several others.
Yeah, writer Paul Allure and letterer Neil Uyatake.
It's a one-off comic. It's called Star Trek Voyager, Mirrors and Smoke.
We have been waiting for someone worthy of our attention.
What? Who are you?
We've encountered them.
Those are Klingons?
Ben, there's a little bit of a preamble here, a Star Wars-like crawl that begins 2372. The dead speak! Rebel ship Voyager, captained by Catherine Janeway, an escaped slave from a brutal Cardassian mining facility, is flung halfway across the universe. Stranded in the Delta Quadrant, Janeway and her ragtag Rebel crew are faced with a choice. Find their way home, or quietly forge a new life far away from the Klingons, Cardassians, and the Rebellion. Janeway chooses the third option. The Voyager will stay. The Voyager will plunder. The Delta Quadrant will be hers, and she will be its pirate queen. A year later, she is well on her way. That's important to read here because we are kind of in media res as soon as this comic begins. If you don't happen to read that little paragraph, you might be wondering, what the hell?
Well, I'll tell you, I did not read that little paragraph. I assumed that was just more, copyright information or something as I, as my eyes glanced across that screen and I just started reading. So it did take me a little while to get up and running with this one, but I kind of liked the challenge of that. You know, it's kind of like reading Dune and not knowing what a Padishah Emperor is or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's like reading on hard mode.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think that a certain kind of science fiction reader enjoys the challenge of that.
We get the ISS Voyager giving chase to a ship. It's the Dreadship Baxial. I think when your ship is called a Dreadship, I think you're understanding what their interests are.
Yeah.
Over there.
I feel like if I ever have a dread ship, it will be like the dread dinghy, you know?
Why is this a quality of the mirror universe? I feel like our bad guys in the non-mirror universe should have dread ships too. Sets the tone.
Gene Roddenberry was famously anti-space pirate.
Yeah.
He hated the idea of space pirates.
Well, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
And yet he was pro Kevin Sorbo. So, whatever.
Essentially, the ISS Voyager has decided to just go ahead and be in the D-Quad and look for things to make them go.
Can you be more specific?
And they're chasing this ship, the Baxial, because it's got what appears to be a Federation-style shuttlecraft in tow. And this is very curious to them. So they are really throwing everything they've got at the backseal, despite the fact that this is a ship that they seem to have a real axe to grind with. This is not their first encounter.
It's a mystery on a couple of fronts, right? Like, what the hell is the deal with the dreadship? But also, why does the dreadship have a Starfleet shuttle?
What's the deal with the dreadship? They get on the FaceTime with the captain of the dreadship, and it's evil Neelix and evil Cass.
Hmm.
I kind of like the look of evil Neelix. I feel like he kind of makes more sense to me as a space pirate than a doofy cook that is always like complimenting people, you know, like the crazy mutton chops at the, and the angle that JK has painted him at really sells him as a bad guy.
I got to tell you, like the Neelix character was one of the reasons that I couldn't quite get into the show when it first came out, but you know, you give nice jovial Neelix a fur-lined jacket,
yeah,
and a dreadship. Suddenly, I'm interested. I'm very interested.
Sign me up.
It's the jacket that really does it for me, I think.
You love an action jacket, Adam.
I do. This is a panel though that also underscores just how little B'Elanna Torres is in this issue. Hardly in it at all, I think. And I think hers is one of the depictions that I like the most. Like, she really looks amazing when you see her.
Yeah, she doesn't have a lot to do in this issue, but spoiler alert, this sort of seems like it's setting up a future run of these comics. So maybe we'll get issues where she does have more to do. The trouble is that the backseal is a tough nut to crack. It is a much more rugged ship than what the Voyager's weapons can penetrate. So they are doing their damnedest to, you know, knock out this tractor beam or penetrate the shields or whatever, and they're not having a great time doing it.
Like everyone in the Mirror Universe, everyone is pretty jacked. Maybe first and foremost, Catherine Janeway.
Yeah, she's got those ripped off sleeves. She's got real Rambo shoulder.
Got kind of a bandolier thing going. It's unclear what is in her bandolier. Maybe we'll find out in subsequent issues, right?
Probably like Tic Tacs or something.
Yeah. There's a little bit of conversation about what to do to the backseal. A dissenting opinion comes from Tuvok, who is wondering why they're wasting their time with this to begin with. Their primary mission should be heading home.
Yeah.
But this is an opinion that's shut up pretty fast. They're here to plunder. Tuvok, get it straight.
Tuvok is all about that go back to the Federation lifestyle. And that is not what Janeway wants to do.
Tuvok looks at Neelix and is like repulsed by the idea of anyone looking like that.
Did I say go back to the Federation? Of course I meant the Alpha Quadrant. There's no Federation. This is the MU.
Yeah, there's nothing there but heads rolling.
They've detected a human aboard this shuttle, and the shuttle starts to try and break free, and they use this as an opportunity to throw everything they've got at the tractor beam projector on the backseal, which does not break the tractor beam, but weakens it enough for the shuttle to be outside of the force field so they can beam the occupant aboard.
I think on Star Trek, we're often given an understanding of relative strength between ships, and I think specifically like among Federation ships. As a Star Trek Voyager person, is Voyager like one of the most powerful ships in the fleet? Is it like one of the best, or is it just a long distance, not scout ship, but...
Yeah, I remember its setup being something along the lines of like, this is one of the newest ships in the fleet. So it's not a galaxy class. It's not equipped like one of the big boys in the fleet, but it's got all of the latest stuff. So I think they fire quantum torpedoes, not photon torpedoes. And they've got they've got different kinds of circuitry and stuff like that.
So the idea of it being overmatched by another ship or equally matched by another ship would suggest that the dread ship is pretty powerful.
Yeah. I mean, this is the MU. You got to come correct if you're going to get in a space fight. I thought that this this reveal of Seven of Nine was very interesting. It has a lot of similarities to her reveal in Star Trek: Picard.
I felt the same way. Yeah.
She doesn't feel like they owe her a ship. And she's also not an XB in this. She is Annika Hansen. Her parents were assimilated, but she was not.
She seems to be non-Mirror Universe based.
Yeah. Whatever universe she's from, she's a nice person.
Yeah. You would expect a Mirror Universe human from anywhere to be ready to fight.
Right.
In a moment like this.
She has no goatee. She's not evil seeming.
She seems willing to ingest a sedative in a strange place.
Yeah.
You don't want to go to a second location and have a sedative in the Mirror Universe, Ben.
Yeah, you don't want your Mirror Universe holo doctor giving you drugs that you don't know the provenance of.
No, exactly. You save that for the privacy of your shuttlecraft.
Yeah. The holographic doctor, the EMH, is very badly treated by Captain Janeway here. And Annika is actually pretty cool to him, you know, treats him like he's a person, which is a weird and disorienting experience for everyone involved.
It's interesting the vibes I got for how they treated the EMH here felt a lot like how Data was treated in his first season, like kind of a lot of jokes to his face.
Yeah, and like mispronouncing it and not him.
Annika actually tells the Prime Universe story of how her family was assimilated. And only in this universe, she was able to somehow avoid that. And not only that, no one on the ship knows what a Borgs is.
Yeah, Commander Cavett and Janeway's jaws drop, and their next scene on the bridge is Janeway talking to Chakotay, and they are really like scheming on what Borgs could be.
I've got to believe that there is a lot of conflict over the thermostat on the bridge of the ISS Voyager, because you've got bear arms for Janeway. You've got leather dusters for some people.
Yeah.
Leather jackets mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, who's running the thermostat? Who's on the nest on the Voyager bridge is my question.
Maybe Captain Janeway runs hot.
That would be a surprise, just given all of the women in my life. Meanwhile, shit seems to be malfunctioning almost immediately on the ISS Voyager after they get Annika on board.
Yeah, they get report from Tom Paris that they're dropping out of warp. Gravity getting flipped around in certain rooms. It's filling six bay up with a bunch of people with various blunt force injuries and poisonings.
People who are already angry are having their day fucked with.
Yeah, I loved that at least one person was turned into some kind of amphibian.
Yeah, that'll happen. So they have a McLaughlin group.
If you want
to figure out what the deal is. But in the Mirror Universe, you have McLaughlin groups to figure out who to blame. And the blame seems to be placed squarely on Annika, their newcomer.
Yeah. Annika is the main thing that they can put a finger on that has changed recently. You know, since she came aboard, it's been nothing but trouble. So Janeway's solution to this problem is like, well, we'll see if we can narrow it down to her, and if we can't figure it out, we'll just beam her into space.
She prescribes to that famous scientific theory, like remove the variables.
Yeah.
By blowing them out into space.
And where do you want to be if you're going to talk about a blowing people out into space type scheme, Adam?
I mean, a shuttle bay seems like a uniquely dangerous place. For that kind of blowing.
So it's Commander Cavett and Commander Chakotay and a couple of unfortunate red shirts, Adam, red shirts that look mighty familiar to me.
Yeah, it's hard to see any pips on these other two fellas.
Yeah.
They seem like a couple of good guys. Maybe a couple of good guys caught in a bad situation, you know?
The one that looks like you is wearing almost a karate gi that it looks like it has sleeve of wizard.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit. It allows for full range of motion. That's what I like about it.
A very comfortable look. My guy is kind of Captain Kirk costume. I wonder what that's about. Why a different uniform for these two unfortunate souls?
It almost looks like you're wearing the tunic that has the I'm with stupid Starfleet emblem around the waist.
Yeah.
That we've come to know and love from certain TOS episodes.
Yeah. This is a scene where Chakotay takes out his primary rival, which we know to be the primary mode of political advancement in the Mirror Universe. He murders his boss, and Kavik goes out the open door along with those other two dudes.
I love that Chakotay's got the Rambo bandana going.
Yeah.
It's big fun.
He looks very badass, like sincerely rough and tough, but he doesn't appear to have the face tats in this.
Yeah, he goes directly to Six Bay after this incident in the shuttle bay because his suspicion is that the things that are happening on the ship are because of Annika, and he's not exactly wrong about that. He's actually 50% right. It's the tag team. Mm-hmm. Of the EMH and Annika that have been doing this around the ship. The EMH has taken a shine to her because she's been so nice.
Yeah, she treated him like a real boy, and he made her his accomplice.
Chakotay takes some blunt force trauma to the dome. The doctors knocked him out.
You got to imagine that emergency medical hologram will know exactly how to knock you out without doing like super long-term damage.
Yeah.
You know, like a special forces guy that knows how to stab you through the right vertebrae to kill you in one go, right?
Right. Some of my favorite panels are the different expressions of the doctor
yeah.
in this episode. I feel like Robert Picardo specifically looks very similar to the actual item.
Yeah. He gives great face in this. Up on the bridge, Janeway is looking through the view screen at you and me floating in space.
Yeah, I like an ECU on both of us.
That's pretty good. And she starts to hear from the doctor over the radio what has happened and why it has happened. He liked being treated with kindness, decency, and respect, and he's been ignored. He's been looked past as a less than for too long, but he's been spending all of this free time he has learning the ship's systems. He's kind of a Moriarty type character in this.
Yeah, he really is.
He's become sentient, and now he can control the ship.
It's mutiny on the Voyager. In a very non-Rick Berman kind of way, we get Annika putting on some bulky clothes. That's how you know this is the Mirror Universe and Berman is not involved.
Right, yeah.
Because it's the exact opposite.
She's getting space-suited up as Janeway and the rest of the crew run down there. I liked that B'Elanna Torres had a bat-leth with her, but the doctor has started to turn down life support, so they get quite choky before they even make it to Six Bay, and Annika is ready for this as she puts on her space helmet.
Leaving everything to the imagination, I might add.
Yeah. Who is the evil Captain Janeway to turn to at a time like this?
There is a dreadship out there somewhere within hailing range.
That is willing to crash itself into the hull of Voyager. Or is that the shuttle? It crashes.
I think it's the shuttle. So it looks like the dreadship flings the shuttle at Voyager,
and Neelix and Kes beam aboard, and they've got little face masks to help them with the atmosphere. And Kes has like pretty significant, like, Dark Phoenix style telekinetic superpowers here. And she starts laying waste to things, you know.
They say when you board a Starfleet vessel, you want to put a mask on the other people in your boarding party before putting on your own.
Right. Yeah. And I think Kes is technically like 2 years old or whatever. So right. Neelix did the right thing, you know, putting his mask on first before helping his child.
The doctor is pretty confident in the face of this boarding party because he's like, what are they going to do against me? I'm a hologram. But he is mistaken in pretty short order because Kes can use her mind abilities to tear his projection. Like, she can twist him all up.
Yeah.
It looks like it hurts.
Does not look fun. They've basically eliminated all threats. So they start to set about wiping the doctor's memory when Annika in her spacesuit comes out of nowhere. She's going for Kes, but it's Neelix that tackles her and gets her out of the way.
I really like how much Neelix looks like Beast in these frames.
Yeah.
Beast from X-Men.
Totally.
And it's that fur-lined jacket that does it. I think that was a really great choice.
Yeah, and the mutton chops.
Right.
He has Kes collapse Annika's face shield on her helmet so that she's subject to the same bad atmosphere as everyone else. And they complete resetting the EMH and drag Annika out of Six Bay.
Sort of a lonely moment when the EMH reappears at the end.
Yeah.
Wanting to help for an emergency that isn't there.
It's really sad.
If a emergency happens in the Six Bay and no one's around to hear it, does the EMH even appear?
Wow. That's deep. Does the Pope shit in the woods?
So it looks like they're able to get the airflow going back on Voyager. Again, something having to do with a thermostat, probably.
Right. And he wakes up Janeway and the rest of the crew and announces that he's going to be taking over their ship. He just needs Janeway's command codes. You know, they can do this the easy way or the hard way, right? Like, get command codes or I'll make your death much more painful. And get the command codes some other way. But Janeway invokes Protocol 7.
Before you turned the page, what did you think it was?
I don't know, because 7 is the shorthand for 7 of 9. So I thought it could have something to do with Annika.
I thought exactly the same thing. I might have chosen a different number.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to note anyone here, but that was a moment where I was distracted by what that could mean.
If she'd said Protocol 47... We know that that's Starfleet emergency frequency, captain's eyes only.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that. But Protocol 7 is something they've programmed into the doctor, enabling him to appear suddenly. And he hyposprays Kes, taking away Neelix's muscle. And the ship is retaken.
So explain this. Like, again, haven't seen much Voyager at all. When the doctor appears around the ship, those are corporeal hyposprays. Like how are they able to go with him? They're not holographic hyposprays, are they?
You could project the hologram and then transporter the hypospray.
Okay, because this was a part that confused me, but I figured there was a good reason for it in the Voyager universe.
Yeah, I don't know. I think in the show, the doctor is confined to Six Bay for much of the first few seasons until they figure out a way to let him out. But he can either see them in the holodeck or the Six Bay, but nowhere else. So he's often like radioing up to the bridge in Voyager.
In the mirror universe, all the hyposprays are filled with meth, right? That's just all it is.
Yeah. So that's it for Neelix. You know, he tries to swing a sword at Janeway, but she kicks his butt.
Really nice shoulder definitions on Janeway here.
Yeah. Page 23, definitely like the hottest action sequence in the issue. And he winds up in the brig in a cell directly adjacent to that of Annika.
Who appears to be in her 7 of 9 style form-fitting suit.
Yeah. I wonder if that's just jail garment in the mirror universe.
Yeah. I guess if your jail garment is form-fitting, there isn't the need for a cavity search, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You can see everything.
Can't hide anything.
No.
Garment. Yeah, it becomes clear that she and Neelix and Kes were all in on this together, and they're going to start planning their next move while they're in the brig. But the last couple pages, the button on the episode, if you will, are Commodore Janeway giving command of the backseal to Captain Chakotay. She's now got two ships in her fleet. She's a real pirate queen. She's growing a fleet.
I mean, this is why you kill the officer above you in rank. I mean, this is the great reward mm-hmm. that Chakotay has earned with his murder.
Indeed. And murder is super legal in the, in the mirror universe. Nobody looks down on him for that. Tuvok makes one more pitch on, hey, what if we go home? And he is once again shut down by Commodore Janeway.
It's a miracle that he's still alive.
I mean, he knows how to do that neck pinch, so he's got his right. utility. She's got one thing in mind, Adam. She wants to go see what's up with those Borgs.
I love this ending to the story.
I do too.
This is part of the pain of this issue, though, Ben. And I think as we get into whether or not we liked it,
mm-hmm.
like, I think one of the frustrations about this issue is that it came out over a year ago as a single, and like, that's it. I want to experience the rest of the story big time.
I want to see what the Borg are in the mirror universe.
Maybe they're just really chill.
They're like, we could assimilate you or not, whatever.
They just have giant cubicle Radio Shacks. They're out trying to sell their technology instead of assimilate it.
Do they have like mechanical goatees?
Like, oh yeah,
all their goatees are made out of Borg implant materials.
God, you know they sketched out this universe before writing this issue. These are answers that are possible to get.
Yeah.
I bet we could dial up JK and get them.
Got to find out if there are more of these in the works. I'd love to see them.
I know. Spill that tea, JK.
Well, Adam, did you like the issue?
Yeah, I mean, outside of the frustration of not having more, like, that's the sort of complaint you want about yeah. something that you've made, right? Like, that it's good enough to want more of it?
Yeah.
I certainly feel that way. It's a ton of fun, and it's the story is strong. It is great to be in a J.K. Woodward visual universe again. And I'm not just saying that because I have artwork to put on my walls. Pretty fun.
Yeah, I really liked it as well. I wasn't sure about this because the mirror universe is definitely not my milieu as a Star Trek fan. But this is probably my favorite mirror universe thing I've come across so far.
Wow. That's big.
And I'm in it.
Yeah, you just like it because you're in it.
Yeah, that's why. Well, do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages in our inbox?
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Adam V, which is what I like to call myself when I'm wearing an especially deep V.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The message is to Julie VB. Happy Captain Picard Day. Thanks for getting me back into Star Trek through the Uxbridge Shimoda podcasts. Question for Ben and Adam.
Ooh.
If you were showrunners for Star Trek Hood, who would you cast as the captain, first officer, hospitality officer, science officer, doctor, chief engineer, and bartender?
Damn. Wow. I guess we probably can't have the guy who played Robert DeSoto as captain, right? He's probably aged out of the part.
I think we know him to be alive at the time of this recording. I think it would be almost better if he were an aged Captain DeSoto on Star Trek Hood. Just, you know, maybe he delegates a little bit more than your average captain. Maybe he relies on that first officer much more than usual.
The first officer who I'm going to cast with Steve Zahn in the role.
That's good. I almost want Steve Zahn to be the doctor.
Okay.
You remember Steve Zahn in that movie U-Turn?
Vaguely.
I like that movie. Anyway, I just remember him in a hospital there freaking out over his buddy who had been injured. And I was like, yeah, that is a real reaction to a hospital scene. I could see Steve Zahn doing that on the USS Hood. Just traumatized by what he's seeing.
Can I pitch Aubrey Plaza as the first officer if Steve Zahn's going to be the doctor?
Absolutely. And in that very fun Aubrey Plaza kind of way, she does not want to be on the chill ship. She has ambitions.
Yeah, right.
She is just moving too slow.
She's rolling her eyes at the whole thing, but also, you know, she's a good officer, so she's actually kind of secretly keeping the whole thing held together.
Unlike Will Riker, she has her eyes all over that chair, the big chair.
Yeah. I always want Whoopi to be in charge of hospitality.
If you didn't say it, I was. And given her lifetimes of experience doing it, I think she would get a kick out of working on the Hood.
Oh, but we also have to cast a bartender. Do we want her to be the bartender? I like the idea that she, like, oversees the bartender at this point in her career.
I think I just have questions about the difference between hospitality officer and bartender at this point. I mean,
right.
Bartender is going to be a sort of ship's counselor figure in a way that Guinan was in TNG.
Right.
I would never want to take her away from that job. She's the best.
I want a science officer that seems sciencey, but also seems like they can kick it.
Like an Adam Savage type?
Yeah.
Like, who makes science fun.
Right, yeah. Adam Savage makes science the funnest.
Yeah.
And then chief engineer.
Look, we haven't seen the last season of DS9. I'm just going to say it. Give Colomini a call.
All right, I like it.
He's still enlisted man, O'Brien. He has not received a promotion.
Fun.
And in fact, maybe it's a demotion to be on the Hood.
Yeah. I imagine that it's like a pretty low stress job and there's not much call for a ship's counselor. But do we want to throw in a bonus ship's counselor casting?
All right. I want to go in a different direction from TNG. Like, I want to go with a non-female ship's counselor this time.
Sure, sure.
Who played Forky in the Toy Story?
Oh, Tony Hale.
Tony Hale.
That's great.
He's someone I feel like you could confide in.
Yeah.
He's someone who's going to teach you how to tap the side of your neck to feel better.
This is a lot of fun. I love it.
Tap the side of your neck with a plastic fork.
All right. Well, thanks, Adam V. Our next Priority One message is from Matt DXProg Hackman. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And it's to Ben and Adam. It goes like this. Max Fun recently did an ads-related survey on the Simian survey platform I work for. So, in a way, you paid me, and now I am paying you.
Wow.
Same time next year. Thanks again for the beer in Houston and for these great pods. Wow.
You know one thing I bet Matt DXProg Hackman runs into all the time, or at least he ran into this in the before times, when you could be around other people? Like, everyone does that thing. You meet a person, they're like, what do you do professionally?
Yeah.
Oh, I do this. Matt DXProg Hackman says he works on a Simian project. And the other person he's talking to is like, oh yeah, is that the thing that Howard Stern makes strippers sit on mic? Every time he's having to tell people that is not the Simian platform that I work on.
Indeed. I think Matt works on a decidedly classier type of Simian platform. And we appreciate what they do. We also appreciate the folks that support the show. So let's go to this pledge break, Adam.
All right.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Klingons? Those are Klingons?
What the hell is going on this ship?
I have no idea.
What is this?
This is the Max Fun Drive 2020 And we're trying to inspire people to go support the show. I think we were supposed to be in the midst of Star Trek Picard episodes when the original planned Max Fun Drive was supposed to go down. And that was great for us because more people are listening to the show when we're in season than off season. We've got Lower Decks coming up soon, and I'm really, really excited about covering that and really excited about season 3 of Discovery. And if you'd like to see this show cover those things going forward, the way to invest in those future episodes is to support at MaximumFun.org/join.
Yeah, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but I think the reason you and I were able to tread water with Greatest Discovery for so long between a seasons and a future season that we were unsure of its premiere date of was because of the support that we had. We knew we could keep producing the show and the production of it would remain worthwhile. And so that's why we're able to do fun one-off episodes about one-off comics like the one we've just done.
Yeah. You know, I think that we both have at times felt a little stressed about Greatest Discovery because unlike Greatest Gen, there's not really a way to build up runway. Like we can't record out in advance because despite all of our begging and pleading, CBS has declined to ever give us advanced screeners of shows that they're making. So we have to like watch, record, and release episodes within a week.
There's no such thing as a bottle episode for us.
Yeah.
For the podcast.
So when we're in season, Greatest Discovery is actually like a challenge. And it's a challenge I'm really proud that we have found a way to rise to. I'm really proud of the work that our editor and producer, Rob Schulte, does on the show. He's doing an amazing job of like turning episodes around really quickly when we're in season. And, you know, he brings the level of detail and focus to those edits that we try to with all of our podcasts. And that's not easy when you don't have a lot of time to really noodle with it, you know?
Yeah, he's been a real game changer for us over the years. And we're happy to have him on the team. And really, the only way that was ever possible was with the support we got from our listenership.
Yeah, Rob gets paid what I would say is a pretty competitive rate for a podcast producer. We're only able to do that through your support. So if you've got it in the budget to give up $5 or $10 a month or any amount, go to MaximumFun.org/join right now. You'll get access to the bonus episodes right away. And if you're at the $10 and up levels, you'll also get lots of nice inducement gifts, some really great stuff this year. I think people are really going to enjoy that stuff. And we really, really appreciate the support, sincerely.
If this isn't a year where you can upgrade your amount, just make sure that the check is checked.
Yeah.
Among your MaxFund supported shows.
Always go in and make sure that your membership is pointed at the shows that you love listening to. And we could really use the support.
MaximumFund.org/join is where you go to support the Greatest Discovery. And we thank you for that.
Our hearts are full of gratitude.
If this was the Mirror Universe, we'd be paying them. I don't want to live in a universe like that, Ben.
Yeah, thank goodness it's not.
What? What's happening?
What's all this?
I'm trying to save you.
What is this?
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin!
Yeah, I mean, I think fun has a different definition in the Mirror Universe, certainly. And I feel like if there's one character who's really feeling themselves the most, it might be Mirror Chakotay when he kills the officer above him. I mean, he does it with a kind of panache that I can be into. He does it while looking a little bit like John Rambo in a way that I enjoy. So I'm gonna say Mirror Chakotay is my Edward Larkin. What about you?
On a very similar note, I wanted to give it to Kes for this issue because of just how her character maybe feels like the furthest from what I remember Kes to be like in the show, you know, strutting around, shooting lightning bolts out of the tips of her fingers at people is just a very fun way to see that character kind of reimagined in a different universe. And I really liked that. Evil Kes.
All right, Ben. We have got a little bit of time before the premiere of Star Trek Lower Decks. It's a show that just dropped its preview recently.
Yeah, people excited about this trailer.
The first episode of Lower Decks is going to come out on Thursday, August 6th, and that allows us an episode of The Greatest Discovery to come out just days before it.
Yes.
Awkward scheduling. What are we going to do with that episode?
We received an email from our buddy Ben Fritz, who has been on this show and is a great friend of the Uxbridge Shimoda family of products. He recommended something pretty clever, which is to go back into the original series cartoons and watch one or two of those.
One or two?
Well, I haven't talked to you about this, Adam, and you can veto this if you want to, but we could record two episodes in between now and the premiere of Lower Decks, if you want it.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Those animated episodes are 24 minutes long.
Yeah.
There's two seasons. Season one is 16 episodes. Season two is 6 episodes. Well, that's weird. So do you want to try to plow through them for the next couple of weeks? Is that what you're saying?
I think we should like pick a few episodes.
Plus, I mean, when we run out of Star Trek to watch in 10 years, we're going to want to do singles of these for sure.
Yeah. So keep an eye on the Greatest Trek Twitter and Instagram accounts. We'll announce which ones we're gonna review over the next couple of weeks. But back to a full-time schedule starting now.
Oof. All right. Well, I mean, this is what makes all the support worth it, right?
Absolutely.
The week in, week out work that The Greatest Discovery now commands is at hand, and it's starting next week.
So thank you so much to everyone that has supported, and we're going to leave it with Rob's from here.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica. This podcast is produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Adam Ragusea of Cooking Fame. Check out his YouTube videos. Like Ben and Adam stated in this episode, listener support is huge for this podcast and my life. It simply wouldn't be possible to keep the show alive and kicking without the support of listeners like you. And every month, we get closer and closer to having an ever-revolving Trek television universe. So please head to MaximumFun.org/join and pledge your support. Do it now for Adam, for Ben, for me, and most importantly, do it for yourself. You're most likely no stranger to paying for streaming services, and $5 or $10 a month will keep this show going. And if you can pledge more, that's great, because in these times, you'll be helping out someone who may not be able to support the pod. Don't forget you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram under the handles Greatest Trek. Those socials are managed by the great Bill Tilly, who also benefits from supporters like you. So let's make this the best Max Fun Drive yet. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on The Greatest Discovery.
It's like reverse Florence Nightingaling, right? Like when the... Isn't that what's happening here? Is that what that means?
I feel like I don't know enough about Florence Nightingale to know what that means.
All right.
I'll take your word for it.
If that reference makes the show, it's because Rob's has decided that it's right. Yeah. And if no one ever hears this, no one ever hears it.
What's your guess? Does Rob's have to look that up on Wikipedia, or does Rob's know from Nightingale and he can just make the call?
I think Rob's has that reference.
Okay.
Like ready.
Rob's is smarter than us.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.